Hello, and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal is to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1969. The topic is Q&A, and the title is, Do Partial Reps Help Muscle Growth? One of my clients, a young guy, 19 years old, he's into bodybuilding. He hasn't competed yet. He's certainly muscular enough when he feels ready, but he wants to compete in classic physique, which in kind of aesthetic competitions for the male categories, there's men's physique where they wear like what looks like swimming trunks, like board shorts, and they're judged on their upper body predominantly. Like, it's definitely stuff to have some legs and some good calves, but you're judged predominantly on upper body. And the poses are different. It's more like modeling. And then there's classic physique. So again, it's men's physique and then classic physique. Classic physique is bodybuilding, but there are height and weight categories, and they're trying to control, they want it to be more of like an aesthetic look rather than just somebody being a monstrous mountain of muscle that maybe doesn't look pretty. They want people to quote unquote have aesthetics and kind of a prettiness to their physique. And then bodybuilding is get whatever freaking jacked and big muscles you can. There still would be judging based on aesthetics and balance from the upper body and lower body and from body part to body part. But open bodybuilding, there's no weight class. So they are big enough to do men's physique for sure, but they want to end up getting to classic physique, and then eventually they would like to do open bodybuilding, and they want to get a pro card. So it's pretty awesome. I'm excited to work with them. I actually helped their dad compete before. So the mom and dad wanted me to work with their son, not only to help them, like help them for eventually for competition, but to teach them how to train and how to eat safely for those goals. They wanted him to have an educated perspective throughout the process. Now, in his training, we regularly use intensity techniques as a way to create some more excitement and more fun in his training. I also want him to learn. He's interested in maybe, you know, being a personal trainer as a hobby, as a side job. So I want him to learn different components. And then he also just likes learning new things. He gets bored pretty quickly. He's not bored with like training. He'll train no matter what I tell him. But I know how to still add some variety to the training and push for progress. So why not have more variety if that's what's exciting for him and keeps him interested in it? Now, we've covered a ton of techniques that help promote growth that would be considered, they're called intensity techniques, and they're ways to push your body to an intensity level beyond just normal repetition failure. So if you're going for a set of 10 and you barely make number 10, then you stop. That's normal repetition kind of failure. You either go near failure or to failure, good form failure. But there are other techniques we can use to kind of push greater intensity than that. So we've used rest pause, cluster sets, drop sets, time under tension progressions, rep tempo schemes, and a whole bunch more. I actually love all that stuff. It makes it more exciting when I write the programming. So I write all the programs specific and individually for each client. So I don't do any copy and paste of anything. So when I write all this stuff out, it makes it more interesting for me if there's something for us to work on. So I actually enjoy the nuance of the techniques as well. Now, recently he sent me a text and asking about my thoughts about lengthened partials. I want to go through and explain that. So he's been watching Sam Sulik. If you do not know who Sam Sulik is and you're in the bodybuilding world, I don't know how. You wouldn't know who he is at this point. He's blown up and is very famous on YouTube. But if you want to check him out, his last name is S-U-L-E-K, Sam Sulik. He's in his early 20s, jacked, freaking, you know, great physique. But he's famous right now for making videos where he talks openly and candidly to the camera about his thoughts towards training. He shows the viewers his training sessions. And one of the things he does all the time is he takes motions to full range failure, but he then continues to try to move. So once he can't contract the muscle all the way, he'll still contract through whatever range of motion he can. If we think of machine chest flies, so we'll all get our headspace thinking of machine chest flies, he'll start getting a full stretch and then a full contraction. where he's trying to bring his hands all the way together, where he'll either touch his knuckles together or he'll touch the machine handles together. Something's touching, so he can get a full contraction. So he's going to get a full stretch, full contraction. As that starts to fail, the weakest part of that range of motion will be that full contraction where the hands are getting closer and closer together. So as that starts to fail, he'll still keep trying to go. So he'll still go to a full stretch. He'll try a little bit of a contraction, whatever he can get, and he'll keep going and keep going and keep going. So he'll come together, you know, once he can't come together 100%, he'll come together, you know, 60, 70%, then 50%. Then he keeps going till it's just 25%. And then he actually keeps going until what would be considered a contractile engagement of the muscle. Meaning, the damn thing might not even move, the machine might not even move, but you can see his muscles will contract against the force to try to move it. Essentially, it's like an isometric contraction. So, he'll go from a full range of motion all the way down into partial ranges of motion, but he'll do this over the course of a set. So he'll do 6 to 8 full reps, maybe 2 or 3 at like 50% range of motion, 2 or 3 at 25%, and then 1 or 2 just contractile engagements. And that's the end of the set. So the reps that he's performing aren't being completed through the full range of motion at the end of the set. Those are called partials. Now he's performing them in a lengthened position, meaning he's going to a full stretch, and then he's only contracting part of the way. So the muscle is in a lengthened position at that full stretch, and then he's only doing part of the repetition, the part of the contraction. So it's a lengthened partial. The opposite of that would be a shortened partial, which would be as if you came together to where your hands were touching, and once you felt like you couldn't, like you were maybe doing your last rep where the hands would touch, you would only stretch, you'd only lengthen part of the way, and then come all the way back together to your hands touching. You would only lengthen part of the way, come all the way back to your hands are touching. So your partials would be from a full contraction to a partial extension. Whereas lengthened partials go from a full lengthened state to a partial contraction. So I know that might have gotten a little confusing. So the final 50% of the contraction, if you're only doing that part, it's a shortened partial because you're only contracting the muscle all the way and opening up only part of the way. Whereas if you went from a full stretch and just contracted half of the way, that's a lengthened partial. It's partial because you're not getting the full range of motion, but you're starting and stopping in a fully lengthened position. So we have lengthened partials, we have shortened partials. And you could also argue if you wanted to say there's mid-range partials. You could certainly do those if you wanted to. But the component that is interesting towards Sam's technique of lengthened partials is that studies have shown that muscle growth is greater whenever muscles are loaded and taken to a fully lengthened position. So when a muscle is loaded under tension, the lengthened position being maximally stimulated produces the greatest growth effect, greater than in the shortened position. So essentially they found that we get greater muscle growth response as the muscle stretches under weight load. And that's really important for us to know. So you grow more not from when a muscle is contracting against weight, but you actually grow more from when it's extending against weight, and that you grow more towards the full lengthened phase of the extension compared to the initial extension. So if we think of a chest fly again, let's say you've contracted all the way to your hands touching. As you start to open up the hands, as you start to return back to the starting full stretch position, at the initial part, when your hands are only like maybe an inch apart, that's starting to lengthen under weight load. But that's less damaging, less promotion of muscle growth than as you continue to extend. As your hands get further and further and further apart, under that extended phase, you're actually getting greater and greater and greater muscular growth stimulus. So this tells us a couple things. is, number one, we want to control the extension. So anytime we are able to muster a full contraction, we don't just want to drop the weight or drop out of position. We want to go ahead and embrace and spend time under that extension, assuming that whatever exercise we're doing is safe for that. So you aren't going to want to do that on a leg press, for example. You're not going to get the last contraction and then extend all the way to the bottom and then try to get out of the machine. So it's just, when we can, we want to embrace and make sure that we take advantage of and use that eccentric phase. We want to be under control when the muscle is extending under weight load. And it also tells us that extending to the full lengthened position is helpful. Now, it's helpful if it's controlled for safety, as the full lengthened position is also the most risky position in regards to muscle tear potential. And that risky factor is a main concern I would have as a trainer. Is I'd want to consider, is the risk worth the reward? Most muscle tears happen when a muscle is in a lengthened position under weight load, and that the weight load exceeds the muscular structural strength capacity. And that can happen due to the weight load being just clearly too heavy. So a person tries something way too heavy, they get extended under that weight load, and then the muscle tears. Or what's actually more common is that the muscle is pre-damaged. It's not fully healed, but they came in and they worked out anyhow. They placed it under a normal weight load that it could only do when fully healthy. And then it gets injured. So commonly when people tear muscles, they aren't using weights that they've never used before. That certainly happens. But more muscle tears happen at weights that a person has done before. They're just trying them for more time under tension than they've done before. So maybe they're trying to move a little slower than they've done before. Maybe they're trying a couple extra reps than they've done before. Or they're in a weakened state, meaning they're not fully healed from their last workout or from the accumulation of workouts over several weeks or several months. So what creates a not fully healed muscle? If we've been lacking in sleep, lacking in proper nutrition, and lacking in hydration. There are other components, but those are the main three. Sleep, proper nutrition, and hydration. Extended workout stress, basically, greater than our recovery capacity over time. So if my workouts have been more stressful than I have been able to recover from, and that slowly happens, workout by workout by workout by workout, it leads to the muscle being in an unhealthy state and at potential risk of injury. So usually when a muscle is at an increased risk of tearing, we're actually not aware of it. We don't have sensors in our tissues that tell us at what percent of healthy the tissues are at. Now, we do know when a muscle feels kind of like twingy or on the verge of cramping or if it's kind of tight. So we can tell, but usually that's already when the muscle's like significantly unhealthy. So like it's been unhealthy for a while by the time we would feel it being twingy or on the verge of cramping or feeling super tight. So in those states of health, we definitely wouldn't be pushing a muscle to failure, especially not beyond failure using a technique like lengthened partials. So we would barely be working that muscle out to a normal contractile capacity. If a muscle feels twingy, feels tight, feels awkward, feels weird, we would already know not to do a full workout, not to do full intensity. Sometimes we're stubborn and we do it anyhow and we get injured, but we would already know that. We would have a sense of that happening and being aware of it. But typically, before the muscle gets to a state where we can feel those issues, there's a range of unhealthy that we can't feel, which means that over time, the tissue actually might be less than optimal health-wise, but we can't tell yet. And then we try something like this crazy intense technique that pushes us to an absolute true failure. We aren't healthy enough for that and we get injured. So this means that if we train with appropriate intensity on a regular basis in a manner that is always on the edge of recovery capacity, which is what most people do, we would train to the best of what we think we could manage, right? We do that all the time. But if we miss sleep, if we miss a meal, if we miss our hydration, if we're overly stressed, if we have imbalanced muscular tightnesses, if we're anything less than our absolute best, we're at risk for injury. At best, we're usually teetering around our maximum recovery capacity, meaning we're hopefully balancing somewhere between, say, 90 to 100% of what our body could really do and do safely. We're trying to balance around that all the time. If we're over 100%, we start to accumulate, you know, small tissue annoyances, and then eventually we get, you know, muscle strains, muscle pulls, twingy muscles, cramping muscles. But if we're under, say, 90% of what we truly could do and recover from, then we're just not maximizing our potential, right? So we would love, if we could operate around, say, 90 to 100% of our true capacity. That means that we're pushing for progress, but we're staying safe. That also means, though, that in order for us to be pushing at 90 to 100%, we have to be recovered to 90 to 100%. That means our sleep, our nutrition, our hydration, whatever we do that contributes towards recovery capacity needs to also be maintained at 90 to 100%. So you need to sleep 7 to 8 hours 90% of the time. You need to hit your calorie target 90% of the time. You need to consume your protein target 90% of the time. If your hydration levels are lower than 90%, you're at risk for injury. If you typically routinely take supplements, such as creatine, that would influence workout performance, but now all of a sudden you've dropped below 90% adherence in that supplement, you're now below what your optimal best abilities would be, your recovery capacity would be, and you start to accumulate wear and tear, and you increase your risk of injury. Anything that you do that contributes towards your recovery capacity needs to be maintained at 90%+ for us to be able to remain healthy and maximize the results of our training, assuming that our training is pushed to the actual maximum of our recovery capacity. So most people train as hard as they can. That then requires that we have a maximum recovery capacity. So a technique such as lengthened partials that truly pushes the muscle to 100% of what it can do then requires 100% of our recovery capacity so the tissues are fully healed and healthy for the next workout. That means that lengthened partials are pretty risky in that they require everything to be perfect. When in reality, our recovery metrics, like our sleep, nutrition, hydration, they rarely ever are perfect. Now, a counter argument. I'm actually going to argue myself, play devil's advocate here. A counter argument is the discussion so far implies that we're doing lengthened partials at an ability to 100% maximize muscular failure. But that is actually not always the case. And it's not for the majority of people. What I mean by this is often when people perform lengthened partials, they would have two significant factors that are actually preventing 100% true muscular failure. One would be neurological recruitment, and the second would be cheating, basically letting other muscles help out. Neurological recruitment refers to our brain's ability to fully recruit all muscle fibers within a muscle group. Most people are not coordinated enough and/or have developed the true, complete neurological connection with their muscles to be able to fully recruit the muscle fibers available. So an example of this would be somebody learning how to play the piano. When you first start, you typically have to learn how to play and kind of move like one hand at a time. And then eventually when you bring two hands together, your left hand is probably going to be playing like chords while your right hand is trying to play like, you know, a couple fingers moving independently of other fingers, but it's usually playing the melody. Whereas your left hand is playing chords and usually the fingers are moving it kind of as one group together. Then eventually you can actually move both hands independently, move the fingers on each hand independently, but that takes time. So at first, you look and feel kind of goofy and uncoordinated when you're trying to learn how to play the piano. But over time, you can actually flow freely to match the desired positions to make the music that you want. Another example of this, and this would be for the older generations, is I remember whenever we got like a computer in high school and we had to learn how to type. When we learned how to learn how to type, everybody looked like there was one finger, like you'd take your dominant hand typically, and you'd press one button with one finger at a time. So if I wanted to write the word, say muscle, I'd be like M U S, and it would take forever. Now, younger generations, you are going to grow up kind of using a keyboard, so you may not even really remember when you fully flustered and kind of figured out how to move your hands independently. But now, I can type everything I want and not even look at my hands. So I can actually type and finish typing a sentence while someone is talking to me and I'm actually looking at them. So now my hands and fingers are coordinated enough to where they can move and do exactly what I want them to do, while I even have mental capacity to be thinking of something else. So at first, it takes all of our ability to do at least a somewhat decent job. And then over time, we develop the ability to do it very naturally, very free-flowing, and with really good coordination. Lifting weights is very similar to that. You're moving your muscles the best you know how, but you're not fully coordinated and not actually able to fully get each muscle to move in the exact position at the exact time with the exact rate of force until time. Like, it takes years to develop that type of coordination. So if you're a beginner or even an early intermediate in lifting, it's very unlikely that you're actually recruiting 100% of your muscle capacity and capabilities. So just like trying to play the piano, you're trying 100%. But eventually your 100% gets better and gets better and gets better and gets better. The second reason why most people aren't going to be able to push a muscle 100% truly to failure is because they allow other muscles to get involved. So the example of machine chest flies for Sam Sulek. When he does his machine chest flies to failure, he eventually starts to swing his upper body into the movement. He'll lean forward to get a full contraction. He'll lean back when trying to get a full stretch because those kind of help force more of a range of motion. He'll also manipulate his elbow position to try to recruit more front shoulder. So he slowly changes his position to allow other muscles, or his leverages will change in order to help the movement. And absolutely most people will do the same. So as your main muscle reaches full failure, your brain is focused on completing the task. So your brain isn't saying, let's recruit 100% of our chest. Your brain is saying, let's squeeze those handles together. So your brain is focused on complete the rep. So as the chest gets closer to failure, actually before the chest reaches full failure, the body will try to let other things help. So this means that the chest rarely ever actually gets pushed truly to 100% failure because other muscles would have started to help out before the chest was fully fatigued. So another way of thinking this is think of dumbbell chest press. If you want to maximize your chest recruitment, but you're doing a movement where your triceps are also helping, which fails first? Do your triceps fully fail, or does your chest fully fail, or do they both kind of sort of fail together? So when we have the ability for our body to kind of cheat for us, even when we're super strict, it usually does. The brain will think complete the task, so therefore it starts to recruit other muscles to kind of push that task to more completion, rather than trying to isolate that singular muscle out to full exhaustion. So to recap my two arguments towards each other, is lengthened partials pose a risk because as a muscle reaches 100% failure, it gets closer and closer to exceeding its healthy capacity, and then once it would become injured. And we don't know exactly when that'll happen because we can't gauge what rate of recovery or what rate of health our muscles truly are at. But it's actually rare that you'll be able to push a muscle to 100% failure because of neurological limitations and because other muscles start to help out. So this means that although lengthened partials are risky, the risk is actually less in reality than it is in theory. So back to my client's question that they texted me was, what do you think of lengthened partials and can we add them to our programming? Due to the risk factor and that there are many other techniques that push our intensity that have lower risk rates, I would not typically recommend lengthened partials as a coach. There are just so many other options, I wouldn't really recommend somebody do it. But as a lifter, hell yeah, I'd try them. I have tried them. Like Sam doing lengthened partials, Sam is new to a lot of people. So if they're new to this world, they're being exposed to the information for the first time through Sam, then that is new to them. But people have been doing lengthened partials forever. I mean, gosh. There's, look at like Ronnie Coleman, Branch Warren, Johnny Jackson, guys that used to lift with God, just insane intensity. They would be lifting with a lot of partial range of motions. And people used to say, you know, oh, that would get a bulky body. That would be a body that wouldn't look any good. But I think Branch Warren has finished like second at the Olympia before. He has had a great physique. So did Johnny Jackson. Obviously, Ronnie Coleman did pretty good. So people have been training with partials for a really long time. So it can be newly exposed via Sam Sulik, but people have been doing them forever. So I have tried lengthened partials before, and I'll give you some examples on exercises you can give it a try yourself. So I've tried them. I would do them with safe movements. For example, it's safer to do a tricep pushdown to lengthened partial failure than a lying leg curl. I know those work two different muscles, but the concept of visually thinking of those two against each other. A tricep press down, your upper arms are kind of next to your body. So the connection point of the triceps to your shoulder is safe because it's kind of in a neutral position. And even though the tricep connection that goes through the elbow joint is extended, it's not extended in a way that is like ultra risky. It's very unlikely to tear the tricep at that spot. You typically would tear it more at the shoulder connection rather than at the elbow connection. It certainly does happen. Absolutely. People have done that. I know that. And people have had to have surgeries in that way. But that's more likely to happen in a press than a tricep press down, like a chest press, overhead press, any kind of like pressing movement, more so than tricep press down. Or it would be more likely to happen on, say, an overhead tricep extension rather than a tricep press down. Your tricep is more exposed and more fully stretched in an overhead position than it would be in a tricep press down position. One end of the muscle is stretched, but not the other end. So the entirety of the muscle belly is not actually fully stretched. Whereas an overhead tricep position, the entirety of the muscle belly is more fully stretched. So that's more of a risky position. So as a coach, I would say try other techniques first. And if your sleep is off, if your food has been off, if you've been anything less than your best towards what contributes towards recovery capacity, I would really recommend maybe, you know, being mindful of that, being very cautious if you try lengthened partials. I would rather see someone do rest pause. I'd rather see them do cluster sets, even drop sets. Those are just safer techniques. As a lifter, heck yeah, I've tried them before. So you can try them. Just try to be safe with them. And there are positions that are partially stretched versus fully stretched or fully at risk. So, for example, trying a alternating one-arm dumbbell curl with partials is a lot safer than a preacher curl with partials. Preacher curl is such a strict position. You can't kind of tweak your position or move out of position if the muscle becomes overly at risk. You're kind of jammed into one position. So it's much more likely to get a bicep tear in a preacher curl taken to failure than a dumbbell curl taken to failure. As we said with triceps, tricep press downs are safer than overhead extensions. Think about chest. It would be safer to do, say, cable crossovers for the chest to lengthened partials rather than, say, a dumbbell fly. That's going to be much more risky, much more risk for a chest tear. Back, typically most rowing motions done in partials are going to be safer than a overhead, like pull up or pull down. Certainly more so than a pullover. Don't do a pullover to partial. Good God. That's higher risk. You can definitely do it. People do it, but it's a much higher risk. So I would usually recommend, you know, rows taken to partial failures rather than pull ups or pull downs. Hamstrings. This is more so a feel, so you can try this out for yourself. You might disagree, but most seated hamstring curl machines, so seated hamstring curls, are going to be safer to do with lengthened partials than a lying hamstring curl. Just the heaviness and the degree of risk down at the knee joint is really high in a lengthened a lengthened partial for lying leg curls. So I would be more tempted to do seated hamstring curls under partial ranges. Now that's a preferential thing. One of my favorite machines for seated hamstring curls is actually a Cybex. There's a variation of Cybex. I think it's a little older nowadays, but that version is super, really good stretch. I mean, I've used like the GOAT, which is the flex leverage seated hamstring curl. We've had one at the gym before, and that is a good machine, but I like the Cybex a little bit more. You're more of in an uprighted seated position, which I feel is you can kind of wedge your hips better and get a better stretch. So you can try that. Just be a little careful, but that's maybe a safer way than, for example, like a barbell stiff leg deadlift. That just, oh my gosh, there's so much risk there. Quadriceps, probably leg extensions are going to be the safest thing to try. And that would be an okay thing to try, like lengthened partials. Especially like Prime Fitness or Strive, where they have the ability to load different parts of the range of motion. Those would be great machines to try a lengthened partial at. So you can try them. I would probably try them on like maybe the last one or two sets. I don't like Sam seems to do them on damn near every set. So, you know, that's kind of a little overkill likely. So you could try it on the last one or two sets and see what you think. So the be all end all of the answer is if you try them safely. If you try them, ask yourself, how do you feel afterwards? Do you feel any kind of tweak or annoyance in your connective tissues? Does a muscle feel, man, my right bicep just feels really strained and annoyed the next day more so than my left? That's potential, you know, tissue damage. So just kind of take a gauge of how you feel. Do you feel injured at all? And then also, how's your recovery? Did you recover well enough for the next workout? If you were supposed to train your legs, say, Mondays and Thursdays, but Thursday comes around and you still feel wrecked, well, then you probably don't need the lengthened partials on Mondays, because if you can't perform your next workout correctly, you would have to either decrease the quality of that workout, then the net total benefit is much lower, or you'd have to work out less often, which the net total benefit is lower as well. So we know we want to train muscles roughly about every 2 to 4 days for maximal growth. And there's a, you know, debate about that, but typically muscles train every 2 to 4 days, 10 to 20 working sets per muscle. That's going to be kind of the ballpark of somewhere to start. Now, if you are training so intensely that you only can train a muscle once a week and you're only looking at maybe 10 to 12 working sets per week, that's actually submaximal. You might be able to get greater growth bringing the intensity down, training it twice a week so you can get up to like 15 to 20 total working sets per weekly volume. So playing with that a little bit and say, okay, if I have to train less often or I have to do a crappier second workout of the week due to adding lengthened partials, I'm probably not actually making a benefit. Then you would finally ask yourself, am I experiencing increased results? So if I add lengthened partials in, do I notice any kind of benefit in 4 to 8 weeks? 4 is pretty short, I know that. But 8 weeks, you know, are you up a little bit of weight? Do you feel a little stronger in your movements? Do you see any more muscle definition? Like, is there anything that you can contribute or attribute to the benefits of adding the lengthened partials? I would also be mindful, though, of if you've added lengthened partials at the same time you were super excited, so you increased your protein or you increased your calories, or now all of a sudden you're going to the gym more than you used to before. Make sure you're aware that any of those other elements would lead to increased results along with any results you might be getting from the lengthened partials. So I would test by taking out the lengthened partials, but still maintaining that increased effort. and see if taking away the length and partials actually changes anything. So that is like my answer is, as a coach, I would stay away from it, and I'd give my clients other things to do. As a lifter, I've done them before. I don't actually do them on a regular basis. I don't benefit from them. I've found them to be, they're more so just tweak things and annoy things. I don't like doing them. So when I do lengthened partials, they are intentional, and they're often in one of those safe positions or safe technique variations. I don't do them on a regular basis myself. I haven't found them to be necessary. I feel like they just strain and annoy things, and I tend to grow better if I just go to good form failure and maybe add some rest pause every now and then, add a drop set every now and then. Those are the two techniques I use the most often. I will use cluster sets. I like that for total volume push. But I've tried length and partials myself. Didn't find them to be the most beneficial technique. I found other things to be more helpful. So if you give them a try, just try them safely. And then just make sure you track and see if you're getting good results. And there you go. So a lot of information, but hopefully that was a helpful insight into length and partials. And if you have any questions, you need anything else, just shoot me a message on our website. Our website is www.brittleirongym.com. On the website, you can find free nutrition information, free training information, find all of our service options. And then you can also find our podcast, which can give you access to older podcasts. So we're at 1,969 of these. So if you ever are interested in listening to some of the older ones, you can find the older ones on our website. And then also on the bottom of the homepage is a contact form. You can always send me any questions or any requests you have for the podcast. Okay. Well, if you like the podcast, please share the podcast. If you like the podcast, please consider donating to support the podcast, which you can do on our website. Also, if you like the information we share in the podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. You can find us and follow us on Instagram and YouTube under the name Brittle Iron Gym. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.